Yes, I'm
on the screen. Okay. Okay, perfect. Yeah, so...
Did you hear what he said? What this was all German, but I assume that some of it was understandable for you, right?
Yes, my German is not so good, but understanding is much easier and it's very close to Dutch. We also have some reporters in Australia, so we are very aware of the situation there. It is the beta test. If we do not resist, that is what will become of Europe.
Yeah, I agree. I just didn't expect this to happen in Australia.
So Willem is a, I think you're a microbiologist, is that correct?
No, I studied pharmaceutical sciences. Of course, I had some courses in microbiology. I did a PhD, although I didn't finish it, but the PhD was in applied nanotechnology and analytical chemistry.
Okay, and you're also the founder of Viruswahrheit in Holland.
Correct, yes. So for the people who are not aware of that, Viruswahrheit, or Virus Truth, is a resistance movement which does a lot of demonstrations, information campaigns, and of course court cases. I think we number now over 20 court cases. And with it, we are showing truth and unfortunately also a lot of corruption and deceit. But today will actually be more about Germany.
Uh-huh.
Okay, yeah, because today you would like to present something about the measles vaccine, because there's a new danger coming up on our side.
Yeah, after the story about Australia, I don't want to bring more bad news, but it is a warning, it is a possibility. So I'm not saying this will happen definitely, but we have to be very aware of what is going on scientifically, legally speaking, and politically speaking, because we see some trends, and up until now, unfortunately, most of the trends that we have spotted have come to fruition. Mm-hmm. So I was looking at the primer sequences, actually. And for that, I looked in the NCBI database. And of course, I saw some familiar names, familiar for Germans for sure. Christian Droste has done a lot of registrations in this database for coronaviruses and for SARS-CoV-2, of course, very specifically. And through looking through these data files, I came to some patents and some publications. And from the side, because we work together with a lot of legalists, we also looked at German legislation, specifically about measles vaccines. And bringing them together at least enables a new form of vaccination. And I think that new form, that second or third generation, will be used to target groups that are what they call vaccine hesitant and groups that are ethically unreachable. So if I can share my screen, I will go through a few slides, if that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So I don't call it vaccines, because now we're talking about gene therapy injections, experimental genetic technology. What we see, and then we go back to what normally vaccines are viruses, live attenuated or dead viruses or parts of viruses. They all contain antigens, and that is the definition of a vaccine. So it elicits an long-lasting immune response through a virus, a dead virus, or part of the virus. Well, in this case, with the mRNA injections, that is not the case. But if we look at the Janssen vaccine in particular, it uses a whole virus, but another virus, an adenovirus, which is also a respiratory virus. It's used as a vector to deliver that same RNA for the body to produce the spike protein of the SARS-CoV-2 virus, and indirectly then immunizing the body or the immune system. That is the scientific explanation or rationale behind using vectors, which are in fact also gene therapy. Now, what we've seen in Holland, because Janssen is produced in Holland as well, is that they started an information campaign specifically targeting young people. And at the time, I just thought it was very unethical. But then from Cambodia, I got other messages that they were using that same, what they call vaccine, to target groups where the vaccine hesitance is quite large and are difficult to reach. Now, what I think and what I see is happening is that all the ingredients to do this with not the adeno vector, but a measles vector, to target vaccine refusers or children which are not of the right age to inject, because what we see now is that these clinical trials have not been concluded for the younger ages. There is already a debate whether you can inject from 12 to 17. Our stance on that is that it's not possible because these are experimental vaccines, so it's not allowed by law, but they want to go younger. Now, what we have seen, and this is the Jens Spaan of Holland, Hugo de Jonge, and he was really breaking all the rules there are concerning marketing of medicinal products. He compared it to food or cosmetic products, and very clearly, Danzen, it's the same word in German. So he was enticing young people that they could go to festivals and that they could dance again, that they could be intimate again, if they only took this shot. And it's a one-shot approach, so directly after the injection, you could start dancing again. Well, of course, that's a breach of a lot of laws and very unethical. We've seen these commercials and marketing also happening in Berlin and in Germany. So that was a red flag directly. And then this is the message of Cambodia. And especially here underneath, you see that they are trying to reach far-laying places and hill tribes. Mm-hmm. Now, what we saw in Holland after the Danzen with Janssen action is that the positive cases went up. And normally, like what we saw in March, that was completely fabricated. So March this year, I'm talking about. But this time, because we have a lot of whistleblowers also working at the local health services and the test facilities, they told me, well, we're actually seeing cases with people that have symptoms and that test positive. So these things combined gave me the idea of what is called vaccine shedding. And vaccine, it's the proper name is vaccine-induced viral shedding. So what happens is that your body starts to produce viral particles. And if there is a certain amount, then you can also be a shedder. And it's in that sense, it is the same as an infection. So if you were normally infected by a virus or another pathogen, then you start reproducing it or amplifying it, and you can become a spreader. Now, the whole idea is, of course, when you use a vector, that it should not be possible. But I'm stating it should not be possible. But is that actually happening? So when we are looking at other experiments, specifically with cattle, and of course we are all aware that this whole One Health program to try to inject the whole world with these experimental jabs is mainly run by veterinarians. So they must be aware of these experiments. So what we're seeing here is that with cattle, they have done extensive testing. And yes, when you use the more common or orthodox vaccines, so using attenuated viruses, then indeed you get an sort of infection. And these animals start to shed viral particles and then can indirectly vaccinate the whole lot or the flock. Now, then we come to a part of German law that was just very recently changed. And I want to focus, it is a very small paragraph, but of the Soldiers Act, vaccines may be used that contain microorganisms. Is a virus an organism? But for now, I think it is within that term. That can be excreted by the vaccinated and absorbed by other people. And then the last sentence is really telling. The basic right to physical integrity is restricted in this respect. So what this law actually says that if this happens to humans through vaccination, you start shedding and making viral particles, then that is the case. Eh? People are allowed to be indirectly vaccinated.
How does that work, Willem? I mean, I don't get it. If you vaccinate one person, how does this shed and spread to another person? I understand, and it makes sense to me, because this is what I think Peter McCullough explained to us. I understand that through bodily fluids, that can be possible. If, for example, you donate, as a vaccinated person, you donate blood to another person. I think that is, it sounds plausible. If breast milk, for example, that's another example.
Yes.
That seems to be working, working. And maybe semen, I don't know, but what else is possible?
So I think Peter McCullough was mainly focusing on the mRNA.
Yeah.
So if you look at our mRNA, then you only make the spike and it's not reproducible by itself. You need a whole viral particle. But what the Janssen, the Janssen vaccine does, but also the AstraZeneca, is to use a vector of a whole other virus. Of course, they tell us that these viruses, these vectors that are used to deliver the same code are not replication competent anymore. So they are attenuated in a sense that they cannot amplify. But is that the case? Have these shedding experiments been done? And now what we see, legally speaking, but also politically speaking, for which groups, which kind of injections are used. It is a possibility that people start shedding. And then we go even one step further. Now, there is a mandate since 10 February 2020, and it comes into effect this year on the 1st of November. And of course, this is after the German elections, and this is when we expect to be in a lockdown again. It is also.
What does this mandate say?
It says this. This is the same mandate. So compulsory vaccination should protect children from measles. Now, of course, it points to the more standard measles injections. But again, they test it. How wide is this mandate? Will they use combined vaccination for measles and COVID? And these are the slippery slopes. So I want to point out a few things that had the law stipulated all children from the age of one. And this is what one of the goals is, to try to start injecting children from 6 months onward. Now, at the moment, this is not possible with the current mandates, with the current injections. But with this mandate, doing it via the measles and using the measles as a vector for this SARS-CoV-2 spike, they have found a loophole. Another group that is not easily targeted is, for instance, asylum seekers and refugees. And that brings me back to where we started, the political need to focus on groups that they can normally not get to when they would do it in a direct way and in a allowed way, looking at the clinical trials.
So you think they that from I think the, from December on we have this the law that everyone has to be vaccinated against measles like once they're born, I think after the year 1970, and that was just like there was a code like the Bundesverfassungsgericht just ruled that this is okay to do it like this, and so that means that you think. They could actually, like in the measles vaccination, maybe have like a mechanism going on that produces the spikes that would then like hop on another person via shedding.
I do not only think, I have the proof. It is possible they can do it. The only question is, will they do it? So this is the last part about the political direction. So especially children under the age of 12. And now, why is this important? 12 is such is sort of a division between small children and adolescent children. Now we have all these clinical trials. I think because the STIKO is now pushed to allow the booster shots, and they just changed their advice that they are not against it. They're still not completely endorsing the shots for minor children. But to get to the smaller ages, I think they will try to use another route in the legislation. Now, then we go into the NCBI database. And this is of your countryman, Drosten. And he did this with an institute from Switzerland. Now, what I point out here is this is one of the first experiments with the new code. It is all synthetic. So this is not from a clinical sample. This is made, and this is what Drosten really specializes in, these retro-engineering of viruses. He created the platform with his colleagues so that with yeast and parts of other viruses, a sort of Frankenstein reconstruction, they made a synthetic version of the SARS-CoV-2. And from that, specifically this part, is the spike. And the spike protein or the sequence of it is completely characterized. It's the same the same publication. Now, why do I point out this? 1273 amino acids. Yeah, so this is the length of the spike. And we have the same part.
Wir sind unter Druck.
Sorry?
No, I'm saying we're under pressure because we have an American first time an American politician waiting in line.
I'll be finished in 3 minutes if you allow me.
Great, very good.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. So here we see another American. The king of gain-of-function experiments, Barrick. No, this is Barrick. Barrick is working under Fauci. Okay. Fauci is funding it, and this is from Chapel Hill. Now, remember Chapel Hill, Drosten, Barrick, also in the beginning of the pandemic. Then we go a little bit further, and here it becomes very interesting. Look, a highly immunogenic and effective measles virus-based COVID-19 vaccine. So they integrated this part. It's the same part, it's the synthetic spike that Drosten already created. Barrick does that. And he does that together with the German Paul Ehrlich Institute and the veterinarian part of that institute. Then we look at clinical trials and we see that a lot of them are already underway. Right from the start, in March 2020, they started experimenting with the standard MMR, so measles, mumps, rubella vaccines. These are the old-fashioned ones, to see how they interact with the new virus. And this was all funded by the Wellcome Trust. And I think if people are aware of the whole scheme behind it, they are very aware of this institute. Now, this is their rationale. The spikes of the measles and SARS are very similar, so you can prune and graft one into the other. This is the clinical trial where they are looking at the combination of the old-fashioned MMR vaccination together with the SARS-CoV-2 new vaccination. So they're doing a lot of compatibility trials, actually. And then we come to the last slide, and this is the publication of this vaccine that has already been produced. And this is done in a collaboration between the North Carolina Chapel Hill Institute, the Gain of Function Institute of Barrick Dondarrion, or Barrick, together with the Paul Ehrlich Institute and specifically the veterinarian part of that. So all the means to use politically, legally, and pharmaceutically, this measles vector-based SARS-CoV-2 injection are there. And legally, the 1st of November is the day they could start, but it doesn't mean that they might have started earlier. So we really have to look for a push or a pressure on educational personnel and young children and asylum seekers to be injected against the measles.
Okay. Well, the thing is, I hope that we're a little farther ahead of the pack than, for example, the Australians, where it looks quite gloomy. I do think that many more people here, many, many more people here in Germany, and probably many more people in the United States have woken up to what's really going on. So if we do try and educate the general public, and in particular the doctors of medicine and the school teachers and the parents, of course, if we do try and educate them about this as a real possibility, I mean, they wouldn't have introduced this into law if they hadn't wanted it to become reality, right?
Absolutely.
So
what we see until now is that everything they say they want to do, they are doing.
And
a glimmer of hope might be that if we look at the vaccination buses they sent to schools in Holland, we pushed them or fought them to a standstill. We had a lot of pressure calling on people to photograph the ongoing crimes of unaccompanied minors that are taking these jabs at the buses. Mm-hmm. We had lawyers sending letters to these schools and local health authorities. And now they at least don't send these buses right to the schools, but they have information days and try to lure them back to these local health facilities. So I think it is very important that we keep sharing information, that we keep making people aware of the schemes, yeah, and that we exert pressure.
I agree. Okay, well, Willem, that was another, close to a horror story, I'd say. But now that we're forewarned, maybe we can become so active and get so many people to rise up. And I think that's happening in the United States right now. If we can manage to get people to rise up, we're going to stop this. And there is no other way. I don't understand how people in Australia can just sit there and watch what's going on. I don't get it.
It is it's a big experiment, and not only medical, but this is one big psychological experiment.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Willem, thank you so much.
Thank you very much
for warning us.
Thank you.
Take care. Okay. Sue Frost is going to be with us now. I'm sorry, Sue, that we kept you waiting, but I think our timeline is still okay for you as well, right?
Yes, I'm fine as long as I leave my home by 9 a.m. or 9:10 California time. I'll make it to my next appointment.
Okay, great. Would you? You're a San Francisco. I'm sorry, Sacramento County Supervisor. You have served on approximately 25 boards. You're a former registered nurse and a California certified emergency nurse. So you know what you're talking about when we're talking about these health issues, which most of us have never even heard of before. But you're at the same time working in the executive part of the government. So you're getting information from all sides. No, I don't want to make you tell us anything. Just go ahead and tell us what you think is important.
Okay, well, I probably should clarify that my nursing background extends back to the early 1980s. I haven't been a nurse since then. My experience in between was in mortgage finance. I was self-employed for 36 years. So I went from nursing to mortgage banking, and I'm a community volunteer and ended up running for local city council. And here I am as a county supervisor. So there's a gap. But I do know the terminology and I understand the people because they're my people as well. Yeah. So, and so I feel like my, I wasn't sure where to start, but I thought I would, give a statement that kind of shares my journey through COVID and the concerns that, came to my mind as I was, experiencing what we were going through here in California. And the first right out of the chute, I remember back in March 2020 when we were faced with this decision to possibly close, you know, everybody go home for 2 weeks to flatten the curve, and everybody nobody really knew what we were up against. We anticipated it could be a bioweapon or what could it be? And fast forward through that time, there were some things that happened that gave me pause and caused me concern. It kind of felt like I was in a, I didn't get the memo. Like everyone knew the plan, but I didn't know the plan. Immediately after we locked down in California and sent everyone home, within 2 weeks, we were looking at resolutions that would put a moratorium on evictions affecting property rights. And then over the months, we went through a whirlwind of, I'm going to say, a whirlwind of, you know, crisis, you know, changes in the rules, you know, we need to extend it. Resolutions that would announce that racism is a public health crisis. We went through environment is a public health crisis, and so with each one of those resolutions, even though they may not be an ordinance, they carry weight. In that they have an impact on the priority in policymaking and how taxpayer dollars are being managed. So, you know, on my board, it was a 4-1 vote. I did not vote for racism being a public health emergency. To me, that was like blindsiding. I did not see that as an emergency. So, and to explain, I always in the past with policymaking, you know, felt that a state of emergency is something where you are, you have a catastrophic event and you don't have the financial resources to manage the initial, you know, getting, you know, things settled and making sure everyone's safe. And it's used generally a 90-day period. Now we've gone into this year and a half period of a state declaration of emergency. So I think I wanted to briefly go over that and just mention that on those 25 boards that I serve on, whereas we did the resolution at the Board of Supervisors, you know, declaring that racism is a public health emergency, then every other board took that and prioritize that in their working, you know, model and their systems to put together plans for race, equity, and inclusion. Even to the point of, one concerning event that happened was with a six county board called SACOG, Sacramento Area Council of Governments, where we were putting together, you know, we hired a consultant, we were putting together a draft plan on race, equity, and inclusion. And I presented a submotion asking to add three words to that draft plan. The three words were equality and the law. And at that time, we were not able to, I got a second, but it didn't pass and we ended up approving the original version. So that to me was a red flag. Moving forward, I just want to make a quick comment about the California legislature. We have a supermajority in the California legislature. And there was policy that was that came prior to our, COVID-19 lockdown in March, and in October of 2019, AB 262 was a part of the health code that directed the public health officer to notify and update government entities regarding communicable diseases. It gave them the really authorized them to report locations and concentrations of cases, the number of residents affected, the measures that government entities should take, and also to issue orders. So it increased power and authority to the local health officer. And in, you know, that was another red flag, you know, in my mind. I didn't find out about it until long after we had been going through months of lockdowns, and I had many businesses and constituents calling me asking, help, can you help us, Sue? We're dying. We're not going to make it if we don't open up. And so, but I felt when I did learn about those early policies that were passed or amended, that they paved the way for early legislative changes that would, would authorize the testing and data tracing, and which ultimately became a decision maker for how we would measure, how we would lock down, which was, there were so many questions along the way, but I won't take a lot of time with that. What I want to get to in my statement to you, and I hope it's helpful to you, and I want you to know that I am here because I think we have to have, it's important that each one of us express our share our experiences and not be complicit in something that could hurt our people and take away our freedoms. Along the way, I have had personal conversations with doctors and nurses and constituents and scientists and researchers. One way or another, I came in contact with them, either through my my activities as a county supervisor, whereby, you know, I was getting calls from doctors saying, Sue, can you help us? The media will not cover this. There are treatments. We can treat people and keep them from the hospital. And so early on in January 21, we had Reopen Cal Now, whereby we invited policymakers from all over California to come and listen to doctors and economists and constitutional sheriffs and learn, you know, the other side of the story. You know, we know COVID is real, but they're not telling us the whole story. There's more to this story. And through those conversations, I learned a lot. I think the stories were compelling. I'd say, you know, it just gave, you know, it's the evidence began to stack up that there was a sort of a, you know, that the CDC and the hospital protocols were abandoning patients, obstructing treatment that could reduce hospitalizations and save lives. The way they're documenting their protocols in the hospitals are causing disconnects that leave undocumented breakthrough cases and vaccine injury cases. They're not connecting a huge amount of the dots there. And people are now being pressured to take a vaccine without, this is my opinion, without informed consent. And this is not me speaking on behalf of my board. It's me speaking personally. And I did my own personal research. I went online to try to study each one of the vaccines to understand what's in them. I went to a pharmacy and I said, I want to think about getting the vaccine. I'm not sure. Can you give me the paperwork that tells me all the details of the adverse effects? On the counter in the pharmacy, it said vaccines are safe. These vaccines are safe. They said, we don't really have paperwork. We have a we ask you questions and then we print something out for you to sign and you'll get a copy of that. But I can't, we can't really, you know, the vaccines are safe, but we don't have paperwork. So I know in my mind, I felt in my mind there was a violation of, you know, yeah, I took the oath as a nurse to do no harm. I was a missionary nurse, even though I didn't do it for very long. I want to know what I'm putting in my body, and I think people should know that. And informed consent, the way I understand it, is it has to be put in a way that they can understand it. So informed consent and, you know, Western bioethics, whatever you want to call it, Nuremberg. I wrote a letter to my board that I was concerned that we might be violating that, and I received a response that we are not. And so I guess that was my opinion. I have talked with doctors who some will and some will not come forward if you wish to speak with them. And it's clear that there are doctors in the hospitals that are saying, my hands are tied. I can refer you to someone else. So there are doctors and public health officials who are not willing to talk about early treatments. I've said, why don't we tell people to take vitamin D, zinc, and C? Why aren't we talking about all the treatments? There are doctors who have treated thousands of patients and lost maybe one or two, and they had comorbidities. Why aren't we doing that? We're not able to talk about that. The pharmacies, I can tell my own personal story about the pharmacies, but I have personal friends, and some were doctors and some were professionals who got sick. I got sick 3 or 4 weeks ago, and I called a friend of mine who's a doctor. He called in a prescription at my local pharmacy, and the pharmacy said, we cannot fill off-label medications for patients with COVID. My doctor said, I never said my patient had COVID. I never mentioned COVID. And they said, well, we don't fill off-label medications. Therefore, I had to order my medication from a pharmacy that would FedEx it. By the time I got it, I was 6 days into it, and it was like I was getting well, and I decided to save that medication for my husband, who's 75, and I perceived that he might have a harder time with this virus if he got it. He did get it. He did go on the medications. We both made it through. I want to say that
so
the media
took the medication and didn't have any real problems.
Well, I'm 10 years younger than my husband. I feel it hit him harder, but we have both been taking vitamin D 2000 international units and zinc and C every day. Well, when we can remember, we're not good at taking pills, but we're doing our best. So yes, he got through it. But I have a friend who, we went to 3 different pharmacies, and I have other friends who were having the same problem. I know people that are ordering medications from India to take them prophylactically, mm-hmm. In fear of just being prepared. So I think the takeaway on this is, number one, people know there's a virus, but we don't know what it is, you know. And okay, so I'm gonna move on unless you have questions.
I would like to ask you, what do you think happens with these pharmacies? Is that they're just like so obsessed with whatever, like a certain kind of treatment that you should get? Or are there any like legal obligations for them not to sell that? Do you have any further information?
Thank you so much for asking that, because that was the point I wanted to get across. My husband went to the pharmacy because what happened is the doctor called in ivermectin, doxycycline, and hydroxychloroquine. And they wouldn't fill the ivermectin or the doxycycline, but my doctor said, Sue, you can get the doxycycline there and we'll order the other through the FedEx. My husband went to pick it up and they did not fill that. They would not fill that prescription. Well, my husband had went berserk in front of the whole pharmacy, made a big scene and said, you know, how they were obstructing treatment to his wife. And in through this whole excitement, they came out and said, the CDC has instructed us what we, told us what we have to do. The CDC has given us guidelines and we have to go by it. So my husband said, so the doctor can't prescribe anymore. The CDC tells the doctor what they can prescribe. It's not a relationship between my wife and the doctor anymore. And the pharmacist said, I'm a doctor too. And yes, that's the rules. So basically, what we have here in America is a government agency that is not elected, that is dictating to the pharmacies what they can prescribe and basically turned medicine, politicized medicine, and turned it upside down, where I cannot go to my doctor. My doctor cannot feel free to treat me. It, mind, body, spirit, the whole me. My doctor's not in, we're not in charge of my care anymore. It's the CDC telling us and government telling us what we can do. And I have never, ever felt that way where I questioned medicine, where I did not want to go. I was afraid to go to a hospital where I didn't trust that the doctors were going to think critically about my care. And so that is a major red flag for me. One that I cannot, that is a freedom. My choice about my body and medical freedom is it's like that line in the sand. And I think that's what's happening in California right now. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of frontline workers that worked all the way through this COVID thing without a vaccine. And they've been, and I've heard their stories. This is that choice about what you put in your body is a freedom that I think, you know, we're pretty nice people. We're trying to go with the program. We're trying to, even though we know the mask, we don't feel like the mask is helping. The box says from China says it doesn't help. It doesn't stop it. My doctor showed me how, you know, aerosol air goes right through the mask on his glasses. He showed it right in front of me. So I know the mask is not stopping the spread, in any significant, it's not making a difference in my mind. That's what I perceive. But what I'm trying to say is,
that's what our experts have confirmed to us. It's impossible. It's simply impossible. Physically impossible.
But it is it's so uncomfortable. I can't breathe. And, you know, you can't breathe, but you're willing to do that. But when it comes down to it, you know, there are so many extraordinary people in my world that are so smart and that are such good patriots. And they're not stupid. They know. They're not ignorant. They've done their homework and they know what's best for them. And we have that. We have those rights in America. We had them, but we don't have them unless we exercise them. But I won't get off on that tangent. I want to tell you more. I want to tell you more about the hospital protocols. I began to have whistleblowers emerge who wanted to meet with me, but I couldn't know who they were until we got there. People are very afraid. I've talked to a lot of doctors who have, some of which came from communist countries, who know what's happening here, who know it in detail, what they understand it, but they're not still, it's difficult to come out public. Some are willing to come public if you wish to speak with them. The in the hospitals, the stories I've heard are that patients are being processed into the hospital. If they've had the vaccine, they do not get tested, but they receive a verbal screening to enter into the hospital. Those who did not get the vaccine are tested. When they get into the hospital, I've had nurses tell me that 80% of the people that have been vaccinated are sick or having major strange events like strokes, myocarditis, blood clots. They're sick. I had one nurse who stated she had a baby, and it was her fourth child. She was breastfeeding, so she went after working all day with vaccinated patients. She pumped her breast for her, to feed her baby, and it came out green. And she was very, she was thrilled. She was so glad she pumped her breast before she fed her baby. I mean, these nurses are acutely aware of what's happening in front of them, and others are not that simple. Mm-hmm. There's two stories mm-hmm. to this, two sides to this story. And I believe the ones that are acutely aware, because I've been there.
It's completely in line with what everyone keeps telling us. I know here in Germany and in other parts of Europe as well, we hear the very same stories. There is a split society. This goes all the way down to the hospitals as well. And many nurses will speak out. They have their own Telegram channel here in Germany. They will speak out, and they're telling the exact same story. I just didn't realize it was, you're saying those nurses that you spoke to say 80% of the people who got the shots have serious, more or less serious side effects, right?
They estimated, one person estimated 80%. I had another person who works in the children. I never worked in that area. I don't know. It's labor and delivery, I guess. She said there's a huge amount of code three over the, they have certain different sounds for different things. The one for stroke mm-hmm. has been increased significantly. She said there's an increased number of child birth defects and spontaneous abortions. That it's just everything is increased. Mm. And they're saying the hospitals are full, but they're not full with COVID, not necessarily with COVID. You know, they're saying it's not, the dots are not getting connected, because if you've had the vaccine, you're in a different category that does not connect your adverse reaction to the vaccine. And the hospitals, from what I understand, that the hospital protocol is not to follow a vaccinated patient unless they gave that vaccine, which is another disconnect. The other thing is that in the hospitals, the nurses have told me that there's no treatment when they get in the hospital. If they have not had the vaccine, or if they have had that vaccine, they should be immediately put on vitamin D and zinc, or, you know, some kind of ivermectin or prophylactic treatment that would help them. Instead, the go-to is, you know, wait till you're dying from shortness of breath and put you on a respirator. And one person said they put her grandmother on fentanyl and respirator. Oh my God. I mean, pardon me. I get so emotional about these things. Okay. I want to keep going though. I want to say,
fentanyl is a drug. I mean,
fentanyl is deadly.
Yeah.
It's killing so many Americans.
Yes. It's part of the opioid crisis.
That's what it is, made
in China, yeah. By the way.
I can't even imagine why someone would put someone on fentanyl at all.
To kill them.
But can I ask you, so this situation, has that been the same ever since the pandemic started, or do you see a difference, you know, in the way that the hospitals now treat the patients compared to how it was, or do they continue the same kind of thing, like with the respiratory treatment? And
those are the latest word that I've gotten from the nurses. They feel there is not a proactive nutrition and proactive treatment to keep them out of the hospital. And when they get in the hospital, there's not an immediate proactive, put them on this, and within 2 days, they'll be feeling, starting to get better. I'm told by, like I said, there's two sets of nurses, there's two stories, yeah. But the story I'm getting the most of is the side of the story that says there's a disconnect. They don't understand the protocols and the treatment. Early on, I had to actually have a protest in 32 degree weather, an outside event with masks and just to get people, policymakers, to come to an event to just learn that there's more to the story, there's treatments. And I brought, you know, we brought, and there were other supervisors who approached me to do this. So I wasn't even the one who thought of it, but I said, yes, I'm in 200%. And we did it. And Jay Bhattacharya and Joe Latapo from UCLA. And, you know, we had experts, you know, talking about the, you know, how the impacts of the COVID lockdown could be as damaging as the COVID itself. And so we were begin at that time, that was in January of 21. We were questioning, it was actually in December, but we couldn't pull it together as fast. But the point is, we were questioning, why won't the media tell people that there's treatments? Why is there a barrier to treatment that could keep people out of the hospital?
Good question, huh? Good question. Yeah. If you do connect the dots, if you do look at what they're really doing, like treating people with fentanyl, if you look at all the side effects of the so-called vaccinations, if you do connect the dots, then at least in my mind, I can't believe these are side effects. These are the effects that seem to be intended. We're going to have to take a closer look at this, but there seems to be something completely off right here, completely off the rails.
It's very, very disturbing when a doctor says, my hands are tied.
Yeah.
When someone says that, and these are just people telling me what they know or what they've experienced, but I believe them. And
I do too.
I don't have a reason not to believe them.
They don't have a reason to lie to us, Sue. They don't have, there's no reason for them to lie to us. For example, Dr. Mike Yeadon, who left his country for good, he's going to start and educate people, I think, in Florida and in Texas, because he feels he has to do this because he wants to educate and tell people this is dangerous. We don't have to fear the virus. We do have to fear the anti-corona measures. He has nothing to gain from this. So why would he want to lie? Why would any of these people, Zelenko and all the others, why would they want to lie to us? I don't get it. I believe them.
Yeah. So then the next red flag that came up for me was the Delta variant began to happen. And that was short, like months after the vaccine started, we started to see the multiple variants. And then they kept, you know, government is all but campaigning, coaxing, social pressuring people to get the vaccine. You'll be popular. You'll win the lottery. You'll get an ice cream cone. Get the vaccine to save the world. Okay. This is, in my opinion, unethical and wrong. It's wrong to do this. And because there are so many people, and I call them innocents. They're innocent because they trust, you know, they've always trusted, and they want us to tell them what to do. And, you know, they could, you know, I don't know. I don't know what the vaccine will do. I've done my studies. I'm not going to go in depth on that here, but I'm just going to say my big question about the vaccine is the Delta variant came, but the same vaccine for the Delta variant as the other. But in the past, first of all, in the past, we've never shut down the entire economy for a flu. Mm-hmm. Second of all, in the past, every year they said the new flu vaccine's here. Get your flu vaccine. This is going to be a rough one. The vaccine was specific to treat that flu each year. But now we're using the same vaccine for the variant. And the question is, how does that work? You know, why is this vaccine so great? I mean, why is it the vaccine that cures everything? It allows you to travel. It doesn't keep you from getting COVID. It doesn't keep you from spreading it. It doesn't keep you from having to wear a mask. It might give you lower your symptoms and you don't have a catastrophic cytokine storm or thrombosis. But I mean, you can do that with vitamin D3, zinc, and C. So, you know, what is it about this vaccine that everyone has to have it? Even our children who statistically have a zero chance of dying from COVID, they're wearing masks and they're trying to vaccine our children. So that's another huge red flag for me. And I can tell you just on in a personal experience, I'll just talk about one night, National Night Out. In California, we have National Night Out every year. And this year we actually had National Night Out because we weren't able to have it last year. And everyone was really excited. And so on my way to National Night Out, this is in one night in 1 hour. And granted, it doesn't happen every hour like that. So I'll qualify it. But I will tell you, it was a red flag. The red flag was I got a call from a friend who said, "Sue, I'm on my way to the hospital. My mom had the vaccine and now she's in something. I don't know if she's going to make it. I'm on my way to the hospital. And oh, by the way, my sister-in-law is in the hospital in Davis. She's like a 35-year-old, I won't say the profession, but she's a professional because I don't know how much I should say, paralyzed. All she can move is her lips. Within days of the vaccine. And then I got to my event and a woman walked up to me and said, "Sue, do you know my husband? You know my husband, Ed, he loved you so much. He died. And I think the vaccine killed him." And she told me her story about how she took him to get the first shot. And by the second shot, he could hardly walk. She had to wheelchair him in to get the second shot. And the next day he was dead. And then another woman walked up while I was talking to her. And she said, I'm sorry, ladies. I just have to butt into this conversation. I just want you to know I had the shot. And I went to the emergency room 4 times. I finally insisted that they do an MRI. And I had a big blood clot in my groin." And she points. And I was like, Oh, wow. I said, "Did you report it to VAERS?" And they said, "What's VAERS?"
See? Yeah, we were told that. That's one of the reasons why there's only between 1 and 10% of the actual number of cases that are reported. It's heavily underreported because most doctors seem to not even know that there's a VAERS register.
But so what does that do with these ladies that you talk to? Are they now sad, angry that they were lured into getting the shots, or do they also not connect the dots? Like in this, that it's
I sent them information on how to report to VAERS. The one whose husband died, I asked her if she would be willing to be a voice. And I think she would. So I, on people like that, I'm encouraging them to report to VAERS. And I don't think they know. I don't think we know, but I don't know if, you know, like the person, you know, a person who has a vaccine injury, I presume if I had a vaccine injury, I would assume, oh, good, they got it and they fixed it and hopefully nothing else will happen. I don't think we know the future of this vaccine. That's the reason I wish we could be more, you know, why isn't anyone talking about the VAERS? That was another thing. I was at a protest. Somehow, if you talk, you're going to pay when, you know, and it, I said, I have serious questions about the VAERS and the number of adverse reactions, and it hit the news and that I'm not fit to serve, and that's fine.
You're getting pushback from the mainstream media because you're voicing that you're having serious questions about the vaccines and the side effects. That's all. That's what triggered them to go after you.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm trying to remember what I said on that video. I said, I have serious questions about the number of adverse reactions that have happened. I showed a graph that showed the spike up. We have groups that will post, you know, usually I'm told by people who know. I know a lot of people. I'm told by people who know who's who. These are Antifa, you know. And they're always at every event, and they'll take pictures of me and then they'll post them and say, I'm with the Proud Boys. I'm at another anti-vax rally with the Proud Boys. I'm not fit to serve. Well, I've never been anti-vax. I got all my vaccines when I was young. Mm-hmm. I can tell you, I have some real concerns about, I have real concerns right now. So
everyone does in the meantime. I told you before, when we first talked on the phone, I told you that I had just before I'd spoken with you, spoken with a group of people from the Bay Area, San Francisco municipal employees, and the tide is turning there, definitely, because they all have these very same questions that you have. One third of the police department doesn't want to play along with this any longer. One third of the fire department doesn't want to play along with this. Half of the 60,000 municipal employees of the city of Los Angeles don't want to play along because a red line has been crossed. I think you probably saw the video with, I think his name is Christian Granucci, the captain of the Los Angeles Fire Department. Very strong
him.
Video. Very strong
God
video.
Bless him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, people like that. I mean, you could see the, you know, it was hard for him to do that. It's hard for every one of us because I can tell you, I was late last night. I was at a vigil, candlelight vigil, for one of our officers that died in a car accident. And I was talking to some policymakers there and they said, Sue, we want you to know, we really respect you and we're behind you. And I know it's hard, you know, they're behind me, but they're not ready. They can't take that stand because it's not easy. I think you have to be in that place in your heart where the consequence is worse than anything. And for me, you know, I think what the line that there were a lot of red flags. I'm not really a good fighter. I'm not an attorney. I'm not a debater. I'm the least likely person to be in politics. I love people and I love I really want to serve them. And I made an oath that I would uphold the Constitution and I would never forget who I work for. And I haven't. And I can tell you, the line that got drawn here is when the vaccine, it's one thing if people are making an informed choice, but when they're not getting when the decision is not informed, properly informed, and when children are at risk, a whole generation of children, and our freedom is at risk, and we've lost it, then, you know, there comes a time when there isn't any job or any amount of money or anything that makes it worth going along to get along. You have to stand up. And I'm in that place. And there's people that are real mad, not happy about that, but I'm sorry, but I have more I want to tell you before we get through this.
Sure.
I met an extraordinary person, a scientist, a PhD. And this was another kind of a enlightened moment for me. You know, I don't know if you heard about Patrick King in Canada.
Yeah.
And his case against the Queen, I guess, ultimately against the Queen. He was being fined, I guess, for protesting. And in his case, part of his discovery was he asked for them to show that they had isolated the virus, mm-hmm. SARS-CoV-2. And in the end, they weren't able to isolate it, and they had to drop the emergency, and it ended. It was basically he went for the jugular and won. He's extraordinary, by the way. He's really smart the way he did that. But I met another person who came into my life who is also a whistleblower. So I won't name names or locations, but I'll just say that person told me that they had done, that they and their team attempted to isolate the virus three different times. They were working with 1,500 ferrets, and they went through the whole, you know, thing, and what they were not able to isolate SARS-CoV-2. They were able to isolate influenza A and influenza B. And they forwarded their work to other major research institutions who followed up and did theirs, and they were not able to isolate it. In the end, there was a lot of controversy, personal controversy around that. They are definitely, they've had threats on their life. It's kind of a sensitive situation. I'm not sure what I should say, so I'm not going to say a lot, but what I do want to say is that it occurred to me about what Patrick King did. So one thing that we're working on with volunteers is to try to request that our public health show, and I did ask this in one of my board meetings, in two board meetings ago, I asked if she would show me the isolated virus, and she did provide information, but it wasn't the, you know, purification of SARS-CoV-2 and the Delta variant, which I had asked for. And my rationale for asking for it was that I wanted to understand how the vaccine for last year's SARS-CoV-2 is appropriate for Delta or any other of the many variants that people are talking about. How do you rationalize? I'm trying to figure that out. It's something that's not making sense.
Many doctors are asking the same question. One of them, we just interviewed him about an hour ago. That's Dr. Wolfgang Wodak. He's asking the very same question. Many other doctors are too, because it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't add up.
Yeah. So this scientist, she taught us how to ask it, you know, via maceration, filtration, use the ultracentrifuge, separate and isolate out all the bad stuff, all the, you know, has to be a sample that's taken from a deceased human that was not, can't be first combined with genetic material, have to take out the monkey kidney cells, the Vero cells, the fetal bovine, in detail, Koch's postulate, you know, isolate the virus, then use that isolated virus on another human to see if they get SARS-CoV-2, and then isolate it. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. that whole process, you know, seeks truth. It seeks to get to the bottom of, we do have a SARS a COVID virus. We are treating a COVID virus. We are treating a variant. And so that's the question. Then I just want to say, our I don't know where that goes. We're trying to figure out, you're always trying to figure out what can you win?
We must.
How can you win? If we fight every little thing. I've been fighting, the rural areas don't get COVID. So why can't we open them up and put the resources to the urban areas? We've been fighting every little thing. We've been in crisis mode, chasing after so many things, trying to wrap our head around so much. But let's just go to this one thing, mm-hmm. and give me an answer on that, and then let's talk. Mm-hmm. That is kind of where we're at, where I'm at. And because I don't know, there is such this is a battle. This is a psychic battle. This is a, we're in a, I don't know how to win. Well, I'm trying to figure it out.
It's probably, it's so monstrous that you cannot deal with it solely on rational terms. This, I think, all of us agree on this. This has to be dealt with on a different level. Of course, we have to continue with our legal efforts. We have to continue with educating people. But there is, and that's how we're going to win. There is a connection that you and Viviane and I and all the others, Peter McCullough, Zelenko, Wolfgang Wodak, Mike Yin, everyone who's watching this, and this is millions now, they're all connected. So that must be on a different level. It's not by accident that people do ask questions. Others don't, but those who are asking questions, and we're becoming more and more, they're in another way connected. As I said earlier, a year and a half ago, had somebody told me this, I would have told them to take their pills and go see a doctor. But in the meantime, I do realize that there is a spiritual level to this, which the other side doesn't have any access to. So we're going to have to make very good use of this, and we are already. That's why the tables are slowly but surely turning, even though the other side is turning up the heat. But that's because they're under pressure now.
Desperate.
Yeah, they're feeling desperate. That's it.
I hope they are definitely turning up the heat. I can tell you, they are. The heat is, and there's another heat turning up. There's a line, that line we talked about, where my body, my choice, about my medical freedom. That is a line that many of us you won't cross that line.
Yeah.
I will lose everything, but I'm not going to give up my health because that's my future. I can make money again. I can get any job I want. I can do things. Okay. I could work as a Walmart greeter if I had to survive. Mm. So, it's not about money or fame or anything. There's something more important, and it's that freedom. And there are a lot of extraordinary Americans, and I hope they're not underestimating us, because they should not underestimate us. We have the heart of a lion, and we want to be free. And I want to say that there's, there is, I mean, they're coming at us. Recently there was a transportation bill, AB 455 in California, that forces vaccinations. It just, thank goodness there were some extraordinary, might not have noticed it. I have so much coming at me, but people noticed it, that it was tucked into this gut and amend bill and had nothing to do with health or anything. It just was tucked in another bill. to force vaccinations. And then there was SB 1102, an employer can fire or refuse to hire someone if they're not vaccinated. I believe that's still suspended. Both of those are probably going to come back in January is what I understand, but I'm not sure. There's another one pending, AB 1105, requiring general acute care hospital employers to develop and implement a program to offer COVID-19 screening testing for healthcare personnel, blah, 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 require general acute care hospital employers to test patients for COVID prior to being admitted with specific conditions, exceptions, does not sound, okay, these are notes of people. What I'm trying to say is they're coming at us. They're coming after this, and they're not going to let this rest, and we cannot rest. And, you know, I want to just make sure I clarify. I'm not, this is not about anti-vaccine. This is about medical freedom and equality. It's about our constitutional rights. We have unalienable rights. Government, the United States Constitution is a contract, and the states contracted with the federal government. The federal government is operating outside of their contract. We have First Amendment rights. We have a Fourth Amendment right not to deprive us of our life, liberty, and property without due process. We have a Ninth Amendment. The enumeration of the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. The 14th Amendment, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, and property without due process or deny a person within its jurisdictions equal protection under the laws. And any law that flies in the face of the Constitution is void on its face. We know these things, but as Americans, we've lived the life of Riley. We've never had to exercise it. And now we're in a position that we're going to have to exercise it in order to keep it.
If you don't use it, you lose it. Yeah.
That's my story.
We're very glad you told us this story. And I know for a fact that lots of people are watching this, in particular, by the way, in California. And I know also for a fact that very many people will see you as an example, and that they will be motivated to not just stand there on the sidelines or sit on the fence, but they will come forward. Many will come forward. It has begun already. It's a good thing that you're out there in the open and that you're not to be intimidated, but you're doing what, I was gonna say, John Wayne says, a man's gotta do what a man's gotta do, but a woman's gotta do what a woman's gotta do as well. And you're doing that. And I'm very impressed. I'm very impressed.
I wouldn't be able to be here if it wasn't for all the people who would take the time out of their doctors that I don't know, take the time out of their busy day to teach me, to help me understand. People from Cuba, Vietnam, China, Russia, mm-hmm. who have said, Sue, you don't know because you're American. I came here because I wanted to get away from communism, but communism is here. It's here.
Yeah.
I've had the gift of that, you know, sometimes, and I've been telling people this, if your intuition, I've had so many people lately who called and said, I just wanted to call and see what do you think about the vaccine? I'm thinking about taking it. I have an appointment tomorrow. I've had those moments that I could share information that might inform them and help their decision. And I've had people who were strong, who built me up when I was down and vice versa. We're working, we can do this together, but we have to do it together. That's the only way we can do this. We have to do it together. And we all have to stand up.
Yeah. Okay. Sue, you're going to have to go to work now, right?
I have to go. But I want to, you know, thank you for, I hope what I shared was helpful, and I want to thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure and an honor, Sue. I mean, I really, I'm full of respect here. I admire what you're doing, and I think a lot of other people are too. And I know it's going to move other people. It's going to motivate other people to do the same. Hopefully, politicians as well. Doctors, politicians in particular.
I had to pray about it, and I had to talk to my husband and say, are you okay if my whole life implodes? Because it could.
It won't.
But okay.
Okay.
So be it. All right.
Well, thank you so much.
Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Sue. And have
thank
a great
you.
Day.
You too.
Okay, thank you. Bye. Bye-bye.
Bye.